You complain about the life that you chose. You are not a victim. Not at all. Your generosity conceals something dirtier and meaner. You're incapable of facing your ambitions and you resent me for it, but I'm not the one who put you where you are. I've nothing to do with it. You're not sacrificing yourself, as you say. You choose to sit on the sidelines because you're afraid. Because your pride makes your head explode before you can even come up with a little gem of an idea. And now you wake up and you're 40 and you need someone to blame. And you're the one to blame. You're petrified by your own fucking standards. And your fear of failure. This is the truth.
Hello, welcome to the Extra Credits Plus of what I believe to be in contention for the best movie of the 2020s, Justine Triet's Anatomy of a Fall. I'm Trey.
And I'm Kelsey.
Do you think this is a good episode to discuss our marriage and our podcast?
Yeah. Yes, I do. What does he say? He's like, would you describe my behavior as castrating?
Yes, I would. Would you like tell our listeners how you've been stealing all of my thoughts and ideas and saying them as your own for 2 years now? Imagine I was like, you made us live here among the mountains of Colorado. So many good lines.
Yeah. So excited. I feel like there are actually a lot of really funny moments and funny lines that I noticed on this rewatch. But I also noticed, which I'm excited to talk to you about today, a lot of like things that were just put right in front of our eyes that contradict, or I guess like go against, maybe contradict's not the right word, but go against some of the testimonies.
Yeah.
But also like, I don't know if it matters. And I'm so excited to talk about this movie today. It is like suspenseful. It's a legal drama, which we love.
We love them.
And it also has a lot of humor.
Yeah. Well, that's going to sound sadistic for anybody who's only seen the movie once. But if you've seen this movie as many times as we have, which I think is going into the 4 or 5 range, you start laughing at a lot more moments.
Yeah.
And seeing Justine Triet's filmography now, she's very funny, like as a writer. And so you can feel the beats in this movie where on rewatch, she was hoping you would find some like darkly comical beats.
Yeah. Well, there are like two things I think that add humor on rewatch, especially. One, we linger with the characters a little bit longer than we might usually, and especially a procedural movie. Like everything feels like this isn't important and we got to keep the momentum moving. Yeah. But here we actually see like Sandra and Vincent meeting and talking about like, well, where should we start? Like, here's the kitchen. Like, we get these awkward moments that are really, I don't want to say like funny, but like they add this dark humor, I think how you put it is the best way, undertone. And then also obviously elements of the court case.
Mm-hmm.
When you rewatch it, especially how the men in the court case are talking to the women, it has like obviously a very pointed, sometimes you can even feel Justine Triet like coming through the screen and that she like purposely like packaged this for the audience having how men in the courtroom respond to her is also kind of darkly funny.
Yeah, it's almost like finding the bizarre comical tension of patriarchy in the courtroom.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's kind of like,
well, because it's like absurd, like at certain points, right?
Yeah. There's like literally no evidence and they're just like, you seem like you're a bad person. it's hard to laugh at. That's what I'm saying. She's like on trial for her life, but this has happened. And we'll get to some inspirations, to actual like innocent women, but like, there is something hilarious about all the men just trying, they're working with nothing, you know, the prosecution.
Well, but I think Justine Triet, like, and she wrote it with her partner too, but I do think she meant it to be comical.
Oh yeah, for sure. Okay. So just so everybody knows, today is a deep dive of Anatomy of a Fall. This is a movie that our Patreon listeners at Living Plus voted for. They chose from all the Best Picture nominees. And Anatomy of a Fall won by far. Mm-hmm. I think the closest movie was probably Lanthimos's Poor Things.
Yeah.
And I wasn't surprised because our Patreon has great taste. You know, the Living Plus members, they've always came through. We also have Alex Garland's Ex Machina and Men dropping on the Patreon feed over the next few days, which I'm really excited for.
We revisited
Alex Garland's filmography, some of the movies that he's written over the past 20 years. We just saw Ex Machina in IMAX, which was incredible. Yeah. I wanted to get up and do the Oscar Isaac dance with
him. That is the only reason we went.
Such a good time.
I was the only one who laughed after that dance too. But yes, I'm excited to talk about those also in preparation for Alex Garland's Civil War.
Yes. So Listeners, you may want to put us at a reasonable volume today and get prepared for this thorough discussion. Maybe do some dishes, go for a run, maybe do some laundry. If you'd like, you can cook a meal. I'd recommend like a good wine and pasta, as our lawyer and Sandra are doing.
Pasta here, yeah.
I got hungry for pasta, and I'm sure I will today when we start the movie because that pasta looked really good.
Yeah.
I assume this will be a 3+ hour, maybe 4 hour conversation. Because this movie like forces anybody treating it seriously to investigate it, you know, not just the murder, but an anatomy of many things, which we'll get into today. I want to start today's episode by reading our text receipts, like our personal individual text receipts. The day we saw Anatomy of a Fall back in November of 2023.
Okay.
I had to go back like literally a long time to find these, but we were sitting in a Alamo draft house, which is for sale right now. So anybody who's not a Patreon listener, subscribe
it's
so then
terrifying.
We can buy the Alamo draft house because we love to own it. I really hope somebody buys it. I don't want to talk about that. Okay, that's going to make me sad. I was watching the trailers for Anatomy of a Fall, or before Anatomy of a Fall. I was enjoying a pretzel, a beer, getting ready for this movie, had a long day. I knew nothing about the film, and you text me that you would be 30 minutes late and asked if it would be worth it to still come watch with me, even though you're losing 30 minutes of this 2.5 hour movie. So I waited to text you back to feel out the first 10 minutes, and the movie opens as it does, you know, as listeners know, very mysterious, disorienting, crazy editing, odd camera movements, interesting coverage of the characters' faces when they're talking, Sandra and Zoe at the beginning. It was almost as if the movie skipped a narrative beat and threw you into a like mid-scene conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then a cover of 50 Cent's PIMP starts playing, and I immediately texted you and I said, quote, yeah, we're gonna have to watch the first 15 minutes again because this movie is not fucking around.
Yeah.
And then I said, you should still come and watch this. And then you said, can I have a sandwich? And I was like, I got you. And I said, what do you want on your sandwich? I ordered the sandwich. And then you said, sandwich, great. Be there in 10. And I responded, say less.
Yeah.
That's how our conversations go, by the way, before movies. Because Kelsey's always in class when I'm seeing movies at 6 or 7 p.m.
Yeah. I think that I remember going in kind of being like, I don't know if it's worth, especially watching a like trial movie, you know, missing the first 30 minutes, you miss so much of
tough.
A like a case. But I do think that I had an interesting experience with this movie. I love that you pulled the receipts. I think you also texted me like, don't worry, like this is a 5-star movie or something. Like
I said, I think already. This is an instant classic.
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't know if I want to miss the first 30, even though it's a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
But I think that it does work even at the point that I came in. So I came in at basically when the trial starts, because I like hit traffic and it still really works. Like I came in when the music drops again, when we're an hour into the movie. And we are starting the trial. So I missed the whole first part of it.
Oh, wow. You missed a lot more than 30 minutes then. Yeah. Wow.
It was like almost an hour. Yeah.
Well, I knew, I was like, you have to see at least some of this. Obviously, we went back. You saw it a second time. And now we've watched it many times in preparation for today's episode. We're about to do a live commentary in a little bit, watching the movie again. I knew, like I said, I just watched like a talky, puzzling thriller that I was like so entertained by and also thematically just so impressed by. And I was like, this might be a masterpiece. And I really use that word lightly. And I know some people don't feel that way, and we'll get into some criticisms or maybe just people's like distance they feel emotionally from the movie. And we could talk about that today for sure. But how did you feel? Because I know you agree that this is one of the best movies of 2023. We did our ranking.
Yeah,
we put it at the second best movie of the year. I thought it was number one, but you had Passages at number one, and listeners can go back and listen to that if you haven't yet. But how do you feel now taking in this movie 3 or 4 times? Are you at that wavelength with me where I'm like, oh, I think this is like an instant legal thriller, marriage, you know, a deconstruction of marriage classic, and of misogyny too? Like, are you on that wavelength, or are you still kind of skeptical of it being that good?
So this is like, I think I've watched it 4 times now. And the first time I watched it, again, I only watched from the trial on. I don't know if I was like keeping up with everything the first time I watched it because there was so much going on. I was really focused on the question of if she was guilty or not, like what I'm normally asking in a courtroom drama procedural movie.
Which is impossible not to do the first time you watch this movie. That's like the only thing you can hang on to.
Yeah.
Because the screenplay is so dense.
And it's also like what you're normally taught to do in the genre, right? But after rewatching this a third time, and then especially my last watch, like it is really, really up there for me. Just in the movies of like the 2020s, in a long time, like one of the best movies that I've seen. And I think that I know there's a lot of hype around this movie, but I do think that it's deserving.
Yeah.
Because of the way that we'll talk about Justine Triet looks at this idea of what Sandra is on trial for and how her trial specifically is treated in the media and how people are like talking to her in the court. And that, and she explicitly, I'm sure you'll like talk about a lot of her interviews that you've watched, because Triet usually doesn't extensive deep dive on our creators, like writer directors.
Yeah.
But Justine Triet, right, talked about how she wanted to give a voice to women who are normally in the genre of like Anatomy of a Marriage type movies. And I think she does such a great job. And this is like what I was talking about when we did Poor Things too. There's a specific humor that that women are able to like kind of dig up and incorporate in a serious movie because they have experienced these like absurd comments before,
right?
Where it feels like it's able to both capture like the seriousness of the moment but also the absurdity of the moment, like this kind of paradox.
Yeah.
And it does that, like having a really interesting important message for our contemporary like film space and world, but also being an amazing like procedural movie that you can just enjoy as like a legal thriller.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many layers to this movie and anybody who's listening, who's like, I guess, I mean, it's just a whodunit, just stay for the next 4 hours because there's certainly more to this dense script than the mystery or whodunit or the, you know, did Sandra, I think this movie runs on the idea of, did Sandra do it?
Right.
You know, did she do it? That's the marketing campaign of this film. Which is kind of condescending to like anybody who's like seriously watching film, because you know that's like not the point of the movie. But it's also funny that they went with that as the campaign, the marketing slogan.
I didn't know that. I didn't see any trailers.
There was even like a website, like, did she do it? Like, I'm serious.
There's a whole subreddit of Sandra.
Let me just look real quick. Is that still alive? Hold on. Yeah, did she do it? Anatomy of a Fall. Yeah, it was a website. Okay.
Oh, it was a website?
Yeah, they put a site so you could, I think you could explain why you thought she did it.
Oh, like the production company?
Distributor
or the,
did it, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So Gone Girl of them.
Well, that's one of the inspirations. So let's get into that in a second. So let's back up. Justine Triet is the French writer and director of Anatomy of a Fall. This is her fourth feature film. She started her career making social justice documentaries on debates in France about sexual identity. She explored political protests across Paris and presidential elections throughout the years. And she did all of this during her college time and post-college life from 2007 to 2013. And she was very much like a politically active filmmaker that was interested in capturing activism and social issues across her country. And you can feel all of that tension and honestly just like intellect throughout Anatomy of a Fall in the script. So I went back and watched her first three narrative feature films, 2013's Age of Panic, which is this political family drama thriller, then 2016's In Bed with Victoria, which is this legal dramedy about the privileges and challenges of a modern woman, and then 2019's Sybil, which is this dramedy about the cost of autofiction. And you can kind of see where you know, Anatomy of a Fall would come out of those three movies. All three of those features are pretty sad, almost like defeatist, while also being deeply funny, which feels like, you know, that's it. I'm familiar with that kind of odd tone based on just watching French films my whole life. But it is interesting about how she captured all of those movies to be more comical, whereas Anatomy of a Fall is more tragic, or at least that's how a lot of Americans, you know, are taking an Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah, I think that like what people associate from American filmmakers, like a Noah Baumbach,
that's a good example.
Is a good example of maybe what we're talking about, of this like seriousness, and there is a darkness, obviously, and kind of a sadness mm-hmm. to a lot of the movies, but there's obviously this like humor of the absurdity of everyday life that is incorporated in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I mean, explicitly is responding to like Marriage Story, even though she loves Marriage Story. And we'll talk about that in a second.
But right.
I think that's, if people are confused and they've only seen Anatomy of a Fall once, when we're talking about humor in her filmography, like that is more so if you've watched Noah Baumbach movies. But also, I'm interested for you to kind of like talk about different connections to her filmography as we watch Anatomy of a Fall today, because I didn't get to go back.
There's a lot.
And watch her, well, her specific like movies that she has done before. Mm-hmm. So I've only seen Anatomy of a Fall. But you did tell me about like one that was kind of a political,
yeah,
right, exploration. Like people were actually being interviewed in the streets, right?
That's her first movie. That's okay. Called Age of Panic, and that's the U.S. title at least. And that movie is really about this moral panic across France about this election that's happening between a nationalist and a socialist. And that's basically what she tries to explore. She expected that movie to end. Well, I don't actually want to spoil it. I do recommend people check Age of Panic out. If you liked Anatomy of a Fall, this is the movie to watch, I think, of the three, even though the second is a lot more in the courtroom and the third is a lot more about the cost of auto fiction and trying to like narrativize your life. The first movie, I think, has that absurd tension that Anatomy of a Fall keeps as the kind of like this propulsive, like emotional through line mm-hmm. of the whole movie. But yeah, like I really, really love Age of Panic. I'd be down to rewatch it.
Cool.
It is kind of looking about how like the broken household in our modern era and contemporary world reflects a broken political institution. And I thought that was really smart. And I'm really excited for listeners to check that out. So please do that, everybody. So Sybil was her most recent movie in 2019. I think it's probably her least effective of her three movies before Anatomy of a Fall. So it is kind of surprising for anybody who was familiar with Trier, I'm sure, to come back with Anatomy of a Fall because it's such a powerhouse of a movie. But with Anatomy of a Fall, co-written with Trier's partner, Arthur Harari, who has been very funny in press runs, being like, I swear, like, I'm not going to fall off a building. No one's going to push me out of a window. And they said this is their first and last screenplay they're going to write together. They wrote it during the pandemic, and it came out of the pandemic, you know, with Fair raising enough. Two children, yeah. And you get this cerebral, twisty, slippery, psycho legal drama thriller that makes argument cinematic.
Yeah.
And that's what we love about legal thrillers, I think, which we can get into at the top when we start the movie. But yeah, I mean, I love Anatomy of a Fall. It is a portrait of a family, of a mother and her son, a successful wife, a struggling husband, a broken marriage. And in the periphery, we get a lot of ideas planted from Trier and Harari. Mm. We get, you know, some ideas planted in front of us, some in the periphery, where we see this anatomy of a broken media, an anatomy of a torn legal system, immigration, xenophobia. There are many subjects, ideas, sub-themes to think on, many metaphors, symbols. It's a really dense text. As pretentious as that sounds, and I'm going to sound pretentious when I talk about why I love this movie today, I don't really care because I think it's a special film. But you know what's running through it, which we've been talking about, is this kind of like mystery aspect, is the did she do it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious watching the movie again four times in, because I guess we'll both say at the top here, I don't think she did it. Like, I don't think she killed him.
I think the first few times, again, I was asking this question and I didn't know. And I still don't know, obviously.
Yeah.
I know Justine Trier said maybe she'll like let people know in 10 years or something like that.
Sure.
But
I hope she never does.
Yeah, me too. But I do think that while it's... I think that it's maybe a frustrating question for people who have watched it only once to say like, well, it doesn't matter. I think that we'll talk about why that is actually a good answer for the movie as we go into it, for what Justine Trier and her partner are trying to like capture here.
Yeah.
But I also, though, from my personal take of watching the movie now, like four and a half times, I think, because I watched the right. first part again this morning, was I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I think that there are like very specific nods to telling us that she didn't.
Right. Yes. You know, going back on what you just said.
Was she a perfect person?
Well, so that's the conversation
was
we're going to have today.
Was he a perfect person?
Was he the real narcissist? Did he manipulate everyone? Did he plan this? There's a lot of possibilities that we'll get into.
Well, I'm also excited to talk about people's reactions to this as well. It's very interesting in like what she's kind of provoking the audience to and how they should respond or how she would think they would respond. I think that it's important that we go in telling people at the top, we don't like save it till the end because it will obviously impact like how we see the film. So even if you saw it differently, maybe you'll, you know, think it's interesting to like hear what evidence, I guess, or different details we picked up to think that she actually is not guilty. And we're actually explicitly told that.
Yes. Well, I think this movie's almost underrated, even though it's been nominated for Best Picture, you know, in our country with the Oscars and screenplay and Best Director. And it's pretty, you know, praised across the globe, I think, in many awards bodies. But like it won the Palme d'Or, you know, at the Cannes Film Festival. It's an indie film that made like almost $40 million. And that's like four or five times its budget, which is wild. But what's surprising about that success to me is that usually movies like this, especially because it has a lot to do with gender, are very divisive. Like people want to argue about these movies, but not in fun ways.
Yeah.
And people have been arguing about this movie online, at least from my observations and in our, you know, private life, like with friends, in really entertaining ways that are fun and interesting. And it's fascinating to hear other people's perspective on certain scenes. Not just the did she do it, but there's like, what we're going to do today is like basically investigate a lot of these scenes. Cause there's a lot of layers to the dialogue in this movie. The screenplay is probably the best part of the film, even though there's so much else to love about it. What I find fascinating looking at the success of this movie is that the audience seems, based on my observations of people online, seems very self-aware that the movie is trying to indict them as like the French prosecution come alive and is trying to almost make them feel morally corrupt for judging Sandra, the lead character. And people seem to be fine with that, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And I think Trié does that because she successfully portrays the lead character as a flawed person.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, later after conversations with people I've seen in our private life with friends, like, and also again online, but like people are coming to terms with like, oh, I judged her for her independence. I judged her for, you know, her creativity, her candor, you know, her directness, her how straightforward she is. Or in some cases, like some people maybe in the movie, like her sexuality. Right. And so making the audience, this fictional French jury, come alive is so subversively clever. And I'm just like really surprised it worked, you know, and I'm surprised it worked here.
Yeah.
You know, because people look at like Oppenheimer, which is a very good movie that got lauded for a movie that made rhetoric cinematic. And I do think that's what's special about that film. But this movie, Anatomy of Fall, really makes argument visually interesting.
Yeah. And it's not in the traditional legal thriller way. And not, I mean, again,
yeah, I agree.
We'll talk about during this podcast, like different legal thriller movies and the genre, like why we love it. But I think that this does do something different in that it's actually like, I think basically just how you put it, right? It's asking the audience to put Sandra on trial.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like provoking them in certain ways. I think a really important piece of this movie that's different from some other Anatomy of a Marriage movies is the character of Daniel, right? Mm-hmm. Like is having a full, emotionally aware, intelligent, like child in the house who is also judging or not judging the mom. And a lot of times like people are basing and also like not explicitly saying, but also judging her for the, what we think in terms of like gender and motherhood.
Right.
I think that's fascinating. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about this.
Those are really contemporary like discussions, especially about gender and film right now, which I want to get into before because this is going to be a Patreon episode. So a lot of this is going to have our Living Plus paywall. So people can check the description to join our Patreon to hear the full 3 to 4 hour conversation today. But I do, before we like, you know, for the main feed listeners, I want them to know why we love this movie so much. So hopefully we can talk about that at the top here in a second.
Okay, yeah.
But this is kind of the perfect happy hour film. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to go to a movie,
go see a movie, hang out with some
friends, talk after, like, this is really, really interesting. It also might be a terrible movie to watch if you're in a really rocky relationship.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, like, kind of or a great movie, you know, if you're trying to figure out a way to see if you, the other person is truly the person you want to spend a lot of time with. And it's kind of like it's sneaky in a way because it almost comes off as a very straightforward movie. You know, where I think a lot of people are going to finish the film and go, that was just like a basic whodunit. Like, obviously she wasn't going to go to jail, but it's also a movie that is sneaky in how it demands serious nuance and getting you to join in this intellectual exercise and questioning constructs and morality. And a lot of that is due to the filmmaking. The filmmaking in this movie is very deliberate, which is a very unusual approach for a courtroom movie that deals so much in moral ambiguity. And I think Trier did such a good job at exploring meta things, as pretentious as that sounds. Like, there's a lot in this movie about, which I haven't totally unpacked, and we can today, obviously, but about how visual storytelling can be manipulative and how this movie plays with memory conceits, because there's a lot of interstitial cross-cutting to fantasies, basically. Like, people imagining things.
Yeah. Which is so interesting. On this last watch, realized were like a part of a character's imagination,
I think.
Which we can talk more about as we get into the movie.
Well, we can just say now, I think we're seeing the movie through Daniel's eyes, right?
Maybe not the whole movie.
Corny as that sounds.
Well, maybe not the whole entire narrative. But I do think in the courtroom, like, those, it seemed that we were focused on Daniel. Mm-hmm. Then we got the specific, you know, play-by-play of here is a theory of what happened on the balcony.
Right.
And then we'd see a cut to it actually happening. And the first time I watched it, I was like, is that actually happening? Are these, you know, flashbacks? But then we get so many contradicting images. But the important thing is that we're focused on Daniel. We see the image, and then we usually go back to Daniel. And I realize that they are his imagination.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
like, we're seeing him picture it.
Well, so I was going to ask you that. Okay, that's how you're...
And it's really smart, because then it mixes us up as the audience of what threads are we supposed to be following.
Right. Yeah, and then it makes you also wonder about his testimonies, too.
Mm-hmm.
And because his parents are such excellent auto-fiction writers, or at least one of them is... Daniel apparently is going to be his own great auto fiction writer who does piano on the side.
Okay.
So, but again, before we get to the Patreon deep dive where we watch the movie and talk about scene by scene, I want to hit you with a reason I think this movie is special.
Yeah. Why is this different than other legal thriller movies or just like a basic, you know, courtroom drama?
Well, what's weird is I don't compare this movie to legal thrillers. Like, I made a Letterboxd list of like my favorite courtroom dramas of all time, and I couldn't even fit this in there because it didn't make sense. I don't know why exactly. So hopefully we can unpack that now. This movie reminds me of a lot of great films that I love in the 21st century that are anti-resolution and that have a lot of moral ambiguity at the end of them, and that are completely subversive in their genres. The first one I thought of was The Social Network, which is like my favorite movie of the past 25 years. First Man, Damien Chazelle's film, especially at the end of that movie.
Okay.
Phantom Thread, in a lot of ways, is like the precursor to Anatomy of a Fall.
In a lot of, that is funny. That is like kind of an Anatomy of a Marriage movie.
For sure. Yeah. an Anatomy of Europe too, which
that
is similar.
Was maybe my favorite Patreon episode that we've done so far.
That's one of my favorite movies we've ever covered ever on the podcast. And then I also thought of The Lighthouse, which is a really weird comp, but there's a lot of people stuck in rooms yelling at each other. Okay. And I kept thinking about Defoe and Pattinson. We'll definitely be doing The Lighthouse this year on the podcast. And I'm sure James will come on for that. So I thought about a lot.
I don't know the Lighthouse bits, but I think everything else.
Well, about gender, like that movie is exploring. Anyways, we're not going to do that right now, but
I think La La Land could like fit in here.
Okay, I don't know if there's as much, I guess there is some ambiguity at the end that we've debated on the pod before.
I mean, there's definitely like it feels a little bit more purposeful. But I was like, here's what I'm saying by not ending it how you thought I would end it.
Well, I meant
versus this movie is not necessarily doing that. It is more of a Phantom Thread. It is more of a, I mean, it's in a special like class of films.
I meant more something that's like anti-resolution in a sense where like you're going to ask your neighbors on both sides of you in the theater how you thought of that ending. And in La La Land, it's very like, closed book. You understand, you know what I mean? Like how the movie's ending. Maybe emotionally, you don't never get a resolution because of the two characters.
I see. People have opinions about how it should have ended, like right. La La Land, but yes. They're not actually asking how did this end?
Right.
Like, what happened?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, I was thinking about movies that are thematically dense, that have layers of subtext.
So then The Lighthouse makes a little more sense.
Yeah. And then those movies use conventions to disguise something darker. And then they come out with something more cutting and a bit more scathing. In Anatomy of a Fall, after three or four watches, aside from provocations about gender, monogamy, immigration, the judicial system, I think I'm most impressed with how it tackles autofiction, which is not something I really care about. But I sort of realized I do, especially after this year of talking about movies like Ferrari and Oppenheimer and Maestro. Not that those are all autofiction, but they sort of play in that field, and we'll get into that in a second, I hope. But I thought the way that Anatomy of a Fall was in conversation with men who use women as tools in movies to explore their psyches was fascinating. And I don't think it was talked about like at all. And I think that most of the discussion of this movie, from critic reviews or deep dives to podcast, has been about like the did she do it, which again, right. We're going to be going through today. But what I was so impressed by was how it tackles autofiction as an art form and the cost of it, and how autofiction has been used by men to sell like pseudo intellectual male victim fantasies that are sometimes wrapped in misogyny, and stories that like feature manic women who are based on supposedly true accounts from those directors or writers.
There's like, always like
real
one
lives
scream scene
from their
right?
fifth like, marriage yeah. or something. That's happened over the past like 65, 70 years. It's become like a famous genre. And those stories usually are trying to seemingly sympathize with a woman, but also proving that women can be as evil as men or even more evil. You know, I'm using that word.
I mean, Gone Girl specifically,
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. I mean, Gone Girl is a comedy, so it's a little bit different. That's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated because I'm talking about the reading that a lot of people have about Gone Girl also.
Right, but I'm talking about movies that like almost are like, women can be alcoholics too. Women can be bad mothers too, like bad parents. Like, women can have multiple partners and cheat on their husbands too. And Anatomy of a Fall feels like it's in conversation with all of those tropes in those conventions within that autofiction genre or kind of that psychosexual psycho thriller genre. And then it's trying to, what I think,
my least favorite,
I know. And I think Anatomy of Fall is doing really successfully is it's trying to reveal that genre as one that exploits women for the benefit of fragile men, or as a genre that sometimes will use the perception of a woman's tortured psyche as a tool, again, to understand a woman more, for men specifically, not for women.
Yeah, it's like, even if it seems like there is a balance in characters, like oftentimes if you're really, why I get really irritated by these movies is like, when it is written by a man, usually like we're seeing the man as a focal point, and there are often like weird choices in dialogue to almost like forgive him, right? Or to like,
right.
It's like adding... I guess it's adding like details where we don't need details. Like it's like,
yeah,
I think maybe I'll just like say, like Marriage Story specifically is what I'm thinking about. Where I really like Marriage Story. I think I cried the last time we watched it. The first time I watched it, I really didn't like it, but I came to appreciate it the second time I watched it. But there are like, you know, moments with Scarlett Johansson's character where she is essentially like, I guess they're just like, there's an imbalance in the film of sympathizing with the Adam Driver character. And that's also another anatomy of like a divorce or marriage movie.
Yeah.
And we just get too much sympathy around Adam Driver's character, too much like, heightened dialogue that feels like weird. And like it wouldn't actually, you know, it is catering to like that character.
It. Yeah. Well, you know, hilariously, Justine Triet was like, I love David Fincher's Gone Girl. Mm-hmm. I love Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story. And I also hate those movies.
Yeah.
For almost a decade now.
Like, that's her quote. I feel the same way.
And that is our literal relationship with those movies.
And we've never heard that take. And
especially about Gone Girl. Like that nuance of a take. We're like, this is a technical feat. It's hilarious about marriage. it's also weirdly still peddling misogyny.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting? Because we're not trying to be like contrarian. And like we often, especially when we're talking about movies that men specifically feel very strongly about, we give
I'll
context.
Get into it. Yeah.
Because like, you know, people are so, I guess, like triggered by us talking about how a woman isn't written, you know, with nuance in a movie about that a man wrote. Shocker. Well, yeah. Like, I know, I'm just saying, yeah. Like, it's just wild to have such a strong reaction. But so, yeah, yeah. I do really love that she said like she has a complicated relationship with them, because we feel the same way. We have, like, ever since we saw them, because of what you're talking about, how the character who's a woman like is specifically written and used as like a narrative like device,
yeah,
instead of a full character. And again, like Gone Girl's a little bit more complicated, but I do think like that this movie, rewatching it for the fourth time now, is so clearly in conversation. Like I see where she is like pulling, yes, from, even in the fight scene. I rewatched the Marriage Story fight scene today too, so I'm excited to talk about that.
That's
when
a
it comes
fun
up.
Day.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like elements of the Amy character in Gone Girl, right? Like people, well, call her one of the best villains.
Arguably,
you know?
Amy in Anatomy of a Fall is Samuel. Samuel? Samuel.
Samuel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry if I do the French. I'm going to be sounding real dull American today. Vincent, Daniel, and Samuel.
Yeah. It's just because we don't want to like do a...
I don't want to sound cringy and try to do any kind of like accent.
Right.
I can't
that
do
we
that.
Aren't going
to
get, yeah, right.
So yeah. I apologize to our French listeners. But yeah, I think a Pike's character in Gone Girl is very much more Samuel in this movie, which is interesting. And we can get into that, you know, throughout the episode. But Trier literally said... What?
I want to talk about that when we get...
Does that make sense, you know?
It does, in but terms also of, he has like Ben Affleck elements, like...
Well, that's what's interesting.
A man of projects.
Well, she's like, saying, you know what's scarier than a vindictive woman? A vindictive man. I mean, that's what Justine Trier is saying in the movie. I think... We're going to get into it. I don't want to step on that part, but what I was going to say was a literal quote from Justine Trier about ScarJo from Marriage Story.
Yeah.
She said, quote, "I will give this woman some things to answer with."
End, yeah,
quote. That is one of the most badass things I've ever heard on a Hollywood press run.
Yeah.
And the only reason she felt comfortable to do that is because she's French. Because,
right,
our American filmmakers do not talk shit about each
would
other.
Would never,
which is
say
so confusing,
a bad
to me,
word about David Fincher or Noah Baumbach. I'm not, you know, I'm not looking for people to tear each other apart. Like I'm
no, yeah.
But I think like healthy criticism is fine. I always really enjoy when like,
yeah,
when directors say things about other directors' films, not in a petty sense, in an actual like, this is something like it creates like, I think, healthy standards for talking about criticism,
right,
of movies. And when we're talking about like social stakes of a movie.
Yeah. Insert Spike Lee, not my cup of tea. Like, yeah, there are a lot of directors who do are willing to talk shit, and that's why they're amazing. And it's not even, you're right, it's not even talking shit, it's just being like critical. But the Hollywood system is so sometimes romanticizing the idea of these directors and everybody on set being these like pure artists, but this is, they're working in with like a terrible commercial, like,
right,
system, yeah, that is like inherently
like, let's
exploitative
cut the scene because,
yeah,
we need to sell the movie.
We,
yeah,
need to be more clear about who's doing the most exploitation or doing the worst stories. Anyways, Trier has talked about a lot of other movies on podcasts and interviews. She's been inspired, obviously, by the title of this movie, Anatomy of a Murder, but even some beats in that movie, and I'll talk about some of those today. Bergman's films, which I'm sure Kelsey was alluding to through like Persona,
mm-hmm,
Scenes of a Marriage. Or other movies like Boston Strangler or Kramer vs. Kramer or, mm-hmm, Cassavetes Opening Night. Those are some of Trier's major inspirations for this movie. Movies that she loves, but purposely, I think, from what I can tell, she has favorite movies and those movies are not them. Those are movies that she loves kind of to hate, what I was saying before.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting. She didn't say that part about those films. She did say the quote earlier about Marriage Story and Gone Girl. But those are these other movies are movies that she's mentioned in passing in conversation. And I'm assuming that, you know, she wanted to keep the controlled chaos of the filmmaking style of all those films that are, there are masterpieces by some that are so lauded that I just named, like all the technical flares of those movies and great performances and tension, while also being like, I'm going to subvert the male victim fantasy trope of a lot of these movies.
Yeah.
I'm going to subvert the popcorn psychology perspectives about women. I'm gonna make some of these movies that are doing a male filmmaker psychoanalysis of women seem like a joke. And that's, I think that was a little bit of her goal in Anatomy, yeah, of the Fall, which is to kind of look at how men are so obsessed with trying to evaluate their own perception of woman's hysteria, you know, and that's why there's so much loaded language online of like talking about Sandra.
Yeah.
Which is only, it's not justified. It's only interesting. It's not necessarily bad. All the sexist language I'm seeing directed at Sandra. It's only interesting because Trier so obviously wrote the character to be playing into the expectations where she would assume the audience would be sexist. And yeah. would want to be like, you look cold and calculated instead of very confident. Or right. like, you have understandable problems with your husband. And then some people interpreting that as, you want to murder your husband.
You, you know? Are cold. Yeah. yeah. I mean, there are very specific lines in that fight, too, that they write for Samuel to say. And mm-hmm. like, very specific adjectives that are used towards women specifically. Yes. Yeah. So I think that that is definitely like purposeful and interesting that in her goal to have the audience kind of put on trial, and because we don't have really enough evidence, then they're asked to interrogate what's left over of why they thought right. she did it, which is their bias. And like yeah. the, and so I think that's like very interesting because she's already like guilty in a lot of people's minds before she even steps in that courtroom or, you know, so
yeah.
But also I just want to say for new listeners, because we often like talk about the good and bad about everyone's filmography that we cover, but
sure.
specifically like we love David Fincher and Noah Baumbach. We've done, I think, yeah, we've done episodes for both of them that cover their entire filmography. So yeah. I just want people to know who are new listeners or not like haters. You can go back and listen to what
Fincher.
We love and yeah. and just like, also, I think we, when we did Marriage Story and Gone Girl specifically, we like kind of discussed that.
Yeah, well, we did Noah Baumbach's most recent movie from a year ago that wasn't totally successful, the Driver film. I'm forgetting
White
the title.
Noise, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, we did, like ranked his whole filmography. He is a wild group of movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess my point was is that I think Anatomy of a Fall is in those subversive movies that are tricking you about their genre, like a Phantom Thread, like a Social Network, even like a surreal movie like The Lighthouse. Except what's different about Anatomy of a Fall is that I think it's way more in conversation with the way that men have co-opted women's experiences.
And yeah.
I think that's been such an like a undervalued part of this film. That's
going to
live on
about.
In film
yeah.
history. I really think it is going to live on in film history as kind of like a breaking point, because you have movies like Ferrari this year, Maestro, Oppenheimer that are exploring the quote unquote genius of a man to reveal that he's actually more complicated and morally flawed, to show the woman in the periphery who are actually maybe the real true geniuses behind the scenes.
Right.
And Anatomy of a Fall feels like it is sort of a fuck you to that genre. You know what I mean? Like there yeah. is something about this movie that is, that almost feels like it's, I've been waiting to see this for so long and it's finally here.
Yeah.
That's why I've been so, like, this is a weird movie for me to like come out and be like, Anatomy of a Fall, like to be so hyperbolic about it. But it's so exciting to, you know, and I'm not saying this is some virtue signaling like white guy,
yeah.
like, but it's so exciting to see a woman filmmaker get this kind of capital and access to making a film of this magnitude. And then for everybody, and for her to get everybody to be in on it mm-hmm. without some people who are in on it realizing though it's kind of about them.
Yeah.
Do you know what
no,
I mean?
No, I mean, I think that's true. And I don't think that it's weird that, you know, as a man, you're like, yeah, fuck yes, like this movie. Because the thing that we often have issues with in a movie is like, especially in the last couple of years, is pretending like you have this, you know, like powerful woman figure who's in the periphery or like, and she gets one scene to talk
yeah.
and it's like not even. So like,
yeah.
this is a trope that we are consistently frustrated with. And it doesn't seem like that yeah. difficult to fix because there are women who also write. And
right.
And so I think that like this movie is really special. And you're right. It's like weird that we haven't gotten it until now. And then also, I think that it is fascinating to see a lot of people embrace it. And I do think it has to do with the legal thriller aspect of it. Even though it's kind of outside the genre,
yeah.
I see what you're saying. I think that a lot of people who even think like, oh, she's guilty, like here's XYZ reason why. Well, and by the way,
do you think it's the true crime part too? Which
I
is
think
like
so.
Which
yeah.
is a lot of people are so accustomed to seeing stereotypes being held against women and the media sensationalizing women and just being exploited in media. And do you think that's a part of it too, where people are like seeing a woman on trial in a movie like this, who Sandra Hüller plays as sort of kind of like on the surface detached, and people are being like, well, I've seen this before. I'm going to come to the theater. I'm interested in this.
I guess. Yeah.
A movie that's like maybe welcoming you to be like, I think she did it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think
so.
Is
that why it's making so much money and winning
and
awards?
I think that we're not like interested in, you know, like judging people who are having that reaction.
No. Yeah.
I think it's more interesting to think about like, why did Trier write this in the way that she did? What details does she give us to tell us that Sandra is probably not guilty, but also that provoked people to a point to think like, oh, well, I'm going to lean on the side that she did do it.
Right.
And also how, again, that she's kind of interrogating this idea of Sandra going into the court already being presumed guilty and having to like fight her way out of that. I do also think that something that's important, though, and was a huge achievement, is that Sandra is also a flawed character. Like,
yeah.
And, but that doesn't make her guilty.
It doesn't make her a killer. That's the crazy thing. It's just like, maybe you don't want to get a beer with her or something. Yeah. But that doesn't mean she murdered someone. I want to get a beer. What's weird about it is I've seen people say, I mean, I don't like her, but she didn't kill anyone. It's like, I kind of like her. I mean,
I identify with her.
Identify? Well, she might have killed someone. Hold on now.
Maybe not her. Like,
no, I'm just
there
kidding.
Are people who rightfully point out, like, she does have some like certain qualities that are people are maybe describing as selfish or cold. That's called focus, everyone. She is a successful writer.
Go ahead. Yeah, go off. I think it's also, you know, if anybody's like, I still think she kind of did it. Again, we're going to interrogate that. But what the movie does so smartly is it uses the visual medium and kind of the limits of it in the visual storytelling of film to perpetuate stereotypes. Like, it's using the imagination of the audience and the characters in the movie. And it feels like Justine Trier, as somebody who comes from documentaries and someone who made their first feature that's half a documentary, really, she obviously has a complicated relationship to movies and the way they've perpetuated stereotypes, and like how this medium is a commercial one, something that she's been very actively protesting in France, and the kind of commercialization of French cinema is something she's anti and trying to get away from studios, trying to work with government to fund big blockbusters and trying to stick to indie projects. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was one of the reasons that her movie didn't get nominated for Best International Feature, because France didn't choose it and it chose The Taste of Things instead. But to add what you were saying, the gender commentary in this movie when it comes to Sandra and Samuel is fascinating, because Trier and Harari flip the power dynamics of the household, sort of, until they leave the household, really. And Trier tries to do that while still painting a sympathetic portrait of Sandra, even if it is a complicated one. And that has been an idea we've seen in movies before, but this idea of a complicated modern woman is different, because when she leaves the household, she very clearly is still living in a patriarchal world. It's Ken's world outside the house, you know? And I think that's the point of the movie. It's showing that a powerful, sympathetic, you know, woman like Sandra, who is grieving the loss of her partner, is on trial for just being a modern woman. And she has to explain her flaws to a court who is judging her as a bad mother, a bad wife, a bad immigrant, an outsider as a German, and possibly judging her as a murderer. And the movie is staying in the court so long because it really wants to interrogate the evidence, which the point of the movie is that there is really no evidence. And so the accusations from the prosecutor are really just kind of like these moralist, biased, subjective perceptions of Sandra. And I thought that was so smart, especially in the time we are in right now in film, where you have cultural stakes when it comes to gender commentaries. We're in such a confusing, I guess is the best word, moment when it comes to gender in film, in art. We have movies being celebrated as satires on gender equity, like Ruben Östlund's Triangle of Sadness last year, which was a movie that was good in moments, that also was very, very complicated in other moments. It's a movie arguing that if you flip the gender in charge of power dynamics, that unhealthy power imbalances like patriarchies will inherently reappear, but they can just reappear as matriarchies.
Right.
And
yeah.
Anatomy of a Fall, is literally
like such
arguing
contrarian, like,
yeah,
kind of, you know, storytelling. And
well, yeah, but
it just feels like empty, like political movies where, yeah, but I think Anatomy of a Fall is doing something different.
As a plumbing, it's the opposite, right? It's saying the exact opposite. It's using the same formula to tell a different, it has a different philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. On gender.
Yeah.
And so both movies are interrogating modern and contemporary gender dynamics while also being really successful. I saw this online when I was just doing research, and I just kind of like, I tie the two together, but both movies, Triangle of Sadness and Anatomy of a Fall, very similar gender commentaries, but they take it in different ways, different philosophies. Both movies won the Palme d'Or for best movie at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
Both films were nominated for best picture, best director, best screenplay, only a year apart from each other. And I find that fascinating because of the voters are the same voters from last year. You know what I mean? So how do you vote for a movie to win like Triangle of Sadness that is taking the literal opposite argument of Anatomy of a Fall? Like, are voters just not seeing what Anatomy of a Fall is doing?
I don't know.
That's confusing. Yeah. I think you have to. I'm surprised no one's asked that question, because maybe Triangle of Sadness wasn't really, and people weren't that critical of it last year. I remember when we talked to Usland on the pod, we talked about that, and he took more of the like Marxist class commentary,
right?
As well, there the main interest of that movie.
Of that,
yeah.
Movie, which, like,
I thought that was the best part of the yacht.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought the commentary on class was the best part, with the like wealthy yacht cruise goers.
Yeah.
That was funny. It was just once we get to the beach, it really falls apart.
Yes, exactly. It comes off less playful in contrarian comedy, like mm-hmm. the first act about who pays on a date. And then the third act is far more like superficial, and it's satire. It lacks context and nuance. And then you look at something like Anatomy of a Fall, and it's like, holy shit, did this movie watch like Triangle of Sadness? It was like, get me some funding immediately. All right, let's talk about this movie in detail. Let's get into it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so as always, our Patreon episodes are deep dives, but they are also live commentary, so we will be discussing Anatomy of a Fall while watching it. If you are on the main feed, then you're listening to the first 50 minutes of this episode. So if you go into the description, you'll find our Patreon, the Extra Credits Plus, where you can join us on Living Plus to get access to the full 3-hour plus deep dive of this episode on there. You'll also find that we publish 3 new episodes on Patreon each new month. We currently have a really fascinating, diverse catalog of deep dives, from the world's greatest filmmakers to some of the best movies ever made, from Goodfellas to Alien to Blade Runner 2049, the original Blade Runner, Silence of the Lambs, Phantom mm-hmm. Thread, The Social Network, Portrait of Lady on Fire,
yeah.
Dune. I love Dune. You'll receive access to monthly newsletters on there too. To patrons still listening, you will get a newsletter in the next few days. We also have some great listener comments lately in the episodes, like on Dune, for example. One of our French listeners, actually, who loves Dune, who did a great job exploring like everything that we were discussing on the pod, and like, it gave me a lot more insight on the movie. What a complex film. I hope people liked our Dune 2 deep dive. That was like 5 hours.
That was so fun. Yeah. Also, like, for Living Plus members, let us know also in Anatomy of a Fall, just or under really any comment section, what you feel like deserves extra credit for the movie, or just like a question you had or something that you were interested in, because we love to like talk with you.
Yeah.
We love to hear what you thought.
Yeah. So for any listeners who want to listen and watch along, you can stream Anatomy of a Fall on Hulu. Or for the real Trier heads out there, like me, you can pre-order Anatomy of a Fall from Criterion, because Criterion is dope and they got this on Blu-ray and it's releasing in May. Very excited for that. I hope there's a commentary. There probably won't be, because
I
feel like
know.
Justine Trier is like, I don't want to talk about this movie anymore.
Yeah, she would have to give it away.
But I'm going to get it regardless. All right, on play, we'll start the movie. 3, 2, 1, play. Okay, so Anatomy of a Fall. How do we talk about this movie?
Yeah.
It's really dense, as we've said. So this film is...
Hi.
Hello there. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, thank you for listening so far, and hopefully you are enjoying the episode so far. I feel like maybe if you made it this far...
They got it this far. They're having a good time.
I mean, let's hope. But to access our full conversation, you can go to the description of this episode to join our Patreon community, the Extra Credits Plus.
Yes, and for only $5 a month, you can get access to our full catalog of Patreon-exclusive episodes. Hope to see you there.